Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump signed a presidential memorandum Thursday initiating actions to consider imposing tariffs on a long list of nearly 1,300 Chinese-imported products worth about $60 billion.
And we're doing something that will be the start of making trade with China more fair.
The move could limit China's ability to invest in the U.S. technology industry, setting the stage for a possible trade war with Beijing. The decision to take action is a result of an investigation conducted by U.S. trade representatives to determine whether Beijing's trade practices may be unreasonable or discriminatory and may be harming American intellectual property rights, innovation, or technology development. The president also is replacing his national security advisor. That's the latest in a number of recent high-level staff changes coming 14 months into his term. In a tweet on Thursday evening, Trump announced that General H.R. McMaster will be succeeded by John Bolton, a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Jeremy Mayer, professor of government policy at George Mason University, says Bolton is regarded as a hardliner on matters of foreign policy and defense.
Trump is hoping that he gets someone who will do what he wants him to. McMaster clearly was resisting Trump on a couple key points like Iran. And apparently the White House has said they wanted a new national security advisor before the North Korea talks happened.
A White House official said Trump and McMaster mutually agreed that the career military officer would resign his post. On Wall Street, stocks traded much lower on Thursday after the trade tariff announcement, the Dow down 700 points. This is VOA. The European Union is recalling its ambassador from Moscow for consultations over the nerve gas attack in Britain earlier this month, reinforcing a united stand against Russia. After siding with Britain in the escalating conflict, the summit of EU leaders in Brussels decided to take a united measure against Moscow Friday. The 28 European Union leaders said there is no plausible alternative explanation for the nerve agent attack other than that it was Russia. Austin, Texas, Police Chief Brian Manley says suspected serial bomber Mark Condit left behind a 25-minute-long cell phone video before killing himself as police moved in to arrest him.
It was a confession because he was, and I even called it as such, that he was admitting to what he had done.
Manley says there was more to it.
But instead, it is the outcry of a very challenged young man talking about challenges in his personal life that led him to this point.
Police believe Condit was behind six bombs in and around the Austin area over the last 3 weeks, five of which exploded, killing two people and seriously wounding five others. The father of one of the Nigerian schoolgirls still unaccounted for after Boko Haram extremists returned 104 girls from a mass abduction says he believes his daughter and others are dead and buried. One of the schoolgirls who was returned spoke of those who did not.
There were five of us that died. Those that died were not killed by Boko Haram. They died because they were trampled upon. It was stress and trauma that made them tired and weak.
At least one of the freed girls has said a Christian classmate remained captive, while those released are Muslims. The United Nations says Saudi Arabian airstrikes are to blame for most civilian deaths and injuries in Yemen.
Yemen is entering its fourth year of conflict, a conflict the United Nations says is getting worse, with no end in sight. In late March 2015, Saudi Arabia began bombing Houthi rebels in support of the government. Since then, the UN Human Rights Office has verified 6,100 civilian deaths, more than one quarter of them children, and nearly 9,700 injuries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A Kenyan appeals court has blocked authorities from using an anal examination to test whether two men had gay sex, which is criminalized in the East African nation. The appellate court judge on Thursday said the high court decision was unconstitutional and violated human rights. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Friday, March 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's opposition SLPP says President Ernest Bai Koroma has been interfering with the independence of the Electoral Commission.
Let the president actually act like a statesman and allow the security institutions equally so be professional in their conduct to make sure that a free, fair and transparent, credible elections is conducted in this country.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the SLPP publicity secretary, but the ruling APC says the allegations are unfounded. We'll examine why Gambian authorities this week arrested several members of Yahya Jammeh's former spy agency, and a Kenyan appeals court strikes down forced anal testing in homosexuality cases.
The appeals court has made very clear that biases against someone's sexual orientation cannot be a reason to subject them to this really quite medieval form of torture.
Nina Gauchel is senior researcher in the LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch. And former French President Nicolas Sarkozy denies Libyan campaign financing allegation. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The opposition Sierra Leone People's Party says President Ernest Bai Koroma has been interfering with the independence of the National Electoral Commission ahead of the March 27th presidential runoff election. SLPP Publicity Secretary Lahai Lawrence Lima says the president summoned the commission staff to his residence and imposed what Lima calls undue pressures. But a spokesman for the ruling All People's Congress Party says the allegations are unfounded. Lima also says President Koroma also ordered the issuance of live rounds and rifles to soldiers to man polling centers and the counting of ballots.
We think that the president, yes, he's the president of the Republic of Sierra Leone, but at the same time, he's a chairman and leader of his party, the APC. So if representatives of the APC were addressed by the National Electoral Commission together with SLPP, we see no point where the commission again could have been called to another meeting with the president and his cabinet. Away from that, again, we also learned that the Sierra Leone police just bumped into the National Electoral Commission's office, and their office was ransacked, and at the same time, they wanted a staff who is very key in also facilitating the runoff elections, that they wanted this staff for an investigation at the police. We view this as part of a systemic approach to hamper the work they are doing towards the runoff elections as a way of derailing the progress of the elections. The point also, again, we've seen that one of the lawyers who went together with the APC party to the National Electoral Commission in representation of the party, this is the lawyer also taking the commission to court on the pretext of also delaying the elections.
President Ernest Bai Koroma is no longer going to be president after the March 27th runoff election. If what you are saying is true, why do you think the president is interfering?
Our constitution makes provision that the presidential term is for 5 years, and after which elections should be conducted to actually fill that space for the presidency. If we do not have an election conducted on the 27th of March and having a new president elect to replace President Koroma, be vacuum in state order, and that will tend to undermine national security in the country. And so we have viewed that the approach of this lawyer taking the National Electoral Commission to court and asking for an injunctive relief as a ploy to derail the work of the National Electoral Commission and not having elections on the 27th of March is threatening to our national peace and security, and we want these elections to go on. We call on our counterpart, the APC, to be committed to these elections, that a one man's interest should not outweigh 3 million population's interest in this nation. Let the president actually act like a statesman and allow the security institutions equally so be professional in their conduct to make sure that a free, fair and transparent, credible elections is conducted in this country.
Mr. Lima, what is this allegation that your party is making that there was an attempted assassination on your candidate, Julius Maada Bio, somewhere in Kamalo?
The APC being jittery of that fact that retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio is popular and has a national appeal right across the country, and that can also give a defeat to the presidential candidate of the APC, even in his own hometown. The best they think they can do now is to eliminate him, and so they will have the opportunity of not having a candidate who has the appealing sense to Sierra Leoneans. So by eliminating him in this race, will give Samura Kamara the easy ride to victory. That is the reason why when we went to Kamalu, they decided to assassinate him by even way the pelted stone at the vehicle, smashing the door mirror at the point where he was seated. But thankfully enough, the stone actually did not catch him, and we were able to escape with him to Makeni and later to Freetown.
There was a major development in the runoff election campaign when the National Grand Coalition of Mr. Yom Kella decided that it's not going to support a particular candidate. What do you make of that decision?
First, as an individual, it is his right to make a decision. But we think if he has stood for change against the backdrop that this government actually has failed, it is on that very platform that the Sierra Leone People's Party stands, and the people are desiring for change. And we think that every other opposition party standing on that ground is on that basis that we want to effect the change, which is the desired look for our fellow Sierra Leoneans. We must be seen actually pushing that policy of change or the idea of change, which is what Sierra Leoneans are looking forward to, because we want a better educational system, we want a better economic policies, we want also a better system of governance that actually gives strength to institutional independence. That's what Sierra Leoneans are looking forward to. And so we would have expected that the leader of the Grand Coalition to make a decision, at least to stand with the Sierra Leone People's Party.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the Publicity Secretary of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. A spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says government has always been supportive of the electoral process in Sierra Leone. Abdoulaye Berete, who also doubles as head of media campaign for the ruling All People's Congress Party, describes allegations by the opposition SLPP that President Koroma has been interfering with electoral process as outlandish. Berete says whatever meeting President Koroma might have held with members of the Electoral Commission was televised to show transparency. He says the SLPP is crying foul because it lacks ideas going into next week's runoff election, which he said the APC is poised to win.
That is baseless and unfounded. If for anything, the government has been very supportive of the electoral process, particularly when this is the first time the government is funding a huge chunk of the money so that the elections can happen. We know it is our constitutional mandate, but at the same time, though, the president has a responsibility to make sure there is due process. That is why the independence of the Electoral Commission is guaranteed. I don't know on what basis the SLPP is making such an outlandish claim that the president is interfering. I only wish they would have adduced some evidence to support what they have said.
The claim is that the president ordered the National Electoral Commission, members of the commission, to come to his residence to have a meeting and imposed some measures that the SLPP claims were not agreed upon by both political parties that are in the runoff election.
Well, in the first place, let me set the record straight. Since President Koroma came into governance in 2007, he has never invited any member of the National Electoral Commission to his residence. All meetings were held at State House, and if it was one of the meetings that was held a few days ago that the SLPP was alluding to, it was an open meeting. It was televised by the state broadcaster, and it was played for the whole world to see, to give the indication that we have nothing to hide. So it is very much preposterous for the opposition, for lack of any ideas going into the runoff, for them to start to cry foul, casting aspersions on the president of complicity with the NEC.
Here is one allegation that the president, Ernest Bai Koroma, evoked the military aid to civil power and has further ordered the issuance of live rounds and rifles to soldiers to man the polling centers.
What NEC requested from the government was to provide adequate security with a view to make sure that the process will go on smoothly so that nobody can take advantage of anybody. That was why the president said, well, I can invoke a military aid to civil population, of which the Sierra Leone police will be in charge. The military will be taking instructions from the police just to make sure that the process goes on smoothly.
What about the allegation the SLPP is making that there was an attempted assassination on their candidate, Julius Madabio, in Kamalu?
nobody takes their allegations serious because they are known to be hyperbolic. They went to Kamalo, whereby Dr. Samura hails from. They went to try to splatter posters of their candidate in private homes. The people said, no, this is not the way it should be. These are our private homes. Go and do that in the public square. That was when they created a euphoria out of nothing. We are going into these elections with nonviolence. For us, the APC is poised to win these elections.
Abdoulaye Berete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma and also head of media campaign for the ruling APC party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, the 23rd day of March. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Gambian authorities this week arrested 10 officers of the State Intelligence Service for their alleged role in the murder of activist Ibrahima Solo Sandeng during former President Yahya Jammeh's rule. Sandeng led a protest march in April 2016 to demand electoral reforms, but a peaceful demonstration was met by a police crackdown that led to the arrest of dozens of people and subsequently Sandeng's death. Amnesty International researcher Sabrina Mateni tells Ricky Stryak what these arrests mean in the context of the country's push to move forward towards a Truth and Reconciliation Commission after Yahya Jammeh's exit early last year.
David Curley, the former prison director, had been arrested in 2017 and he had been charged with abuse of office and then released, but that matter never went to court. So my understanding is that they've been investigating him and this might be one of the allegations where they actually have evidence enough to charge him. And that's why he was arrested again a few days ago and on Tuesday charged with conspiracy to murder Baba Job. So it might be that there are other things he's considered to have committed, but this is actually what they have some evidence for, enough to sort of proceed with the charges.
He allegedly worked with the infamous junglers, Jammeh's infamous hit squad. What has happened to known members of this group since Jammeh's exit?
So a few members of the junglers were supposedly left with Jammeh when he went to Equatorial Guinea, and a few are supposed to still be with him. And then just after Jammeh left, quite a few of them were arrested, so I think over 10. And they're still in detention, and they've still not been charged now for over a year and a half. So this has been a concern to Amnesty and other human rights groups, and we have raised it with the Gambian government to say that fair trial rights need to be accorded to all Gambians. Even those suspected of committing some of the worst crimes. And so they really do need to be charged or released. But at the moment, they're still in detention.
Gambian police recently also arrested 10 officers in relation to activist Solo Sandeng's murder. Is this a good step forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been positive that Gambia has been looking at accountability seriously. There were some concerns, you know, at the beginning when Jammeh left, whether there'd be lots of amnesties or whether they wouldn't take prosecution seriously. And I think, you know, we can see these different steps that have happened show that they are quite serious in making sure that there is accountability for past crimes. And with these, you know, 10 NIA officers who were arrested yesterday, I think 8 had been charged for conspiracy to commit murder and 2 had been released on bail, again, for the death of Solo Sandeng. So again, I think these are all positive steps. Of course, you know, we would just say that it's very important that fair trial rights are upheld. And so it's necessary that anyone who's arrested has access to a lawyer, that they have enough time to prepare their defense, that they're able to go through the justice system with their rights upheld. Because for Gambia to move forward, they need a credible justice system. There shouldn't be anything which is a show trial or an unfair trial. And I think the Ministry of Justice has acknowledged that they still have some capacity needs. So they need like more staff and they need more equipment. And I hope that that will also be responded to make sure that these trials are fair. And then, of course, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is starting soon. And I think that for us is, again, very positive. And we would also just say it's important that any information that comes out of that commission is also used to set up a proper prosecutorial strategy and to make sure that even those victims who may not be so connected or not as well known, they too can also get justice.
That was Sabrina Mateni, a researcher for Amnesty International. She was speaking to Ricky Stryake from Dakar, Senegal. A Kenyan appeals court has struck down the use of forced anal testing in homosexuality cases. Rights activists are hailing the verdict as a key victory that could have a ripple effect in the region. Rael Ombuo reports from Nairobi.
The Court of Appeals in the coastal city of Mombasa ruled Thursday that the forced anal testing of suspected gay men is unlawful. The judges deemed the practice a violation of human rights. Jerry Gateru, the acting director of Kenya National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, which filed the case, describes her reaction.
Excited, happy, affirmed mostly. We just honestly think that it's about time that the dignity of LGBT people is preserved in the way that it should be, as you know, as enshrined in the Constitution.
Homosexuality is illegal in Kenya, punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Authorities have routinely subjected men arrested under the law to anal examinations. Thursday's verdict stems from a 2015 case. In 2015, Mombasa police obtained a court order to force two men to undergo anal exams and HIV testing at a local hospital. The two men had been arrested and charged with unnatural sex. The National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission challenged the court's decision on the grounds that anal examinations are cruel, inhumane, and degrading. The commission also argued that the exams were a breach of medical ethics, both in Kenya and internationally. Nila Goshal is senior researcher in LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch. She called Thursday's ruling historic.
The appeals court has made very clear that biases against someone's sexual orientation cannot be a reason to subject them to this really quite medieval form of torture. And I think that there's a good chance that this ruling will serve as precedent in other countries as well.
She says activists in Uganda plan to file a constitutional challenge against the use of anal exams and predicts that activists will do the same in other African countries, like where the exams have not been banned. Homosexuality remains far from accepted in Kenya. Dr. Ezekiel Mutua serves as the chief executive officer of the Kenya Film Classification Board. He's more popularly known as the country's morality cop.
Gay people are human beings, and therefore, to the extent that somebody could be subjected to the anal test, I think that's very wrong, and that was a violation of their rights. I would actually support them in that regard, but that does not mean that homosexuality is right.
In February, Kenya's High Court began hearing of arguments in a potentially landmark case that seeks to repeal Section 162 of the colonial-era penal code. The plaintiffs argue that the state cannot criminalize consensual same-sex relations between adults. It is the first time that a Kenyan court has considered such an argument. Rai Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The political fallout from an allegedly illegal Libyan campaign financing scandal continues to shake France, even as former President Nicolas Sarkozy strongly denies wrongdoing. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Former French President Sarkozy claims he's been accused without physical proof, and allegations that Libya illegally financed his 2007 campaign have made his life hell. That's according to Sarkozy's alleged statement to investigating magistrates, published Thursday by France's center-right Le Figaro newspaper. The 63-year-old Sarkozy is under formal investigation, a move that has shaken France's political establishment. At issue are allegations he accepted millions of dollars from the regime of late Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi to finance his successful 2007 presidential campaign. If they prove true, they not only raise questions about the outcome of the vote in which Sarkozy beat his socialist rival Ségolène Royal, but also recast France's rocky relations with Libya during his tenure. Royal's former campaign manager, Eric Minucci, told French radio that if true, the allegations carry immense consequences, not only for France, but for Europe and the world. Domestic political reactions have ranged from denouncing the investigation as a spectacle to praising an independent judiciary that puts nobody above the law. Geopolitical analyst Philippe Moreau-Defarge says the investigation marks a watershed in France. While this is not the first probe targeting an ex-French president, Sarkozy himself has faced others, it's particularly striking because it deals with Libyan money. And shortly after entering office, Sarkozy invited Gaddafi to Paris.
The president of the Republic is, in a way, cannot be touched, is untouchable. And now he can be indicted like any Frenchman, like any person in the street.
Under Sarkozy, France later became a key player in 2011 NATO airstrikes in Libya that ultimately helped to topple Gaddafi. That same year, his son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, made his first allegations about the Libyan campaign financing. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
To 5 minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with preparations for the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, Australia, where Kenyan athletics team for the Commonwealth Games has threatened to stop training until their allowances are paid. The athletes, who want the government to provide training kits among other equipment, were infuriated, saying they will only resume training after their dues are paid. But Sports Principal Secretary Ambassador Kermini Kabera has assured Kenya's Commonwealth Games squad that they will have their pending allowances settled before the first batch leaves for the Gold Coast on Saturday.
We actually said no payment in cash, and that was the misunderstanding. We have refused. We shall not pay money in cash to anyone, because the minute you start that, then you open up a can of worms. The kits are all here. The only part left is there is a certain part of the shoe that's not here.
Elsewhere, Ghana's Deputy Youth and Sports Minister, Pius Hadziza, has denied reports that Team Ghana took broken bicycles to Australia to be used ahead of the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, Australia.
We have three cycling athletes, regular cycling athletes in Australia, and we have more than enough bicycles for them. We have six sets of bicycles for three athletes. Three of those bicycles are brand new.
Ghana has 72 athletes competing in 12 sporting disciplines in the games, which kicks off between April the 4th and the 15th, 2018. Staying with athletics news, 2016 Olympic gold medalist Caster Semenya stormed home to victory in the women's 1,500 meters final in Pearl, racing for the third and final time in the athletics Grand Prix. Semenya was chasing down Zolabot's time of 4 minutes 1.81 seconds in the event to claim a national world record, but fell short as she came agonizingly close when running in Durban during the 2016 African Championships, missing out by 0.19 seconds.
No, the race was fantastic. I had to focus on my rhythm, so I'm quite happy with how I ran the race. I don't know, because I couldn't see the clock, so yeah. But anyway, life, this is life, so we keep moving.
The Uganda national netball team, the She Cranes, has stepped up preparations for their two-legged encounter against neighbors Kenya in the qualifiers for the 2018 Women's African Cup to be played in Ghana in November. The team's head coach, Farida Bulega, is confident the girls can pull up a surprise result when the two sides meet later in the year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, March 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you in Africa a good weekend.
The late Stephen Hawking, the brilliant theoretical physicist, cosmologist, teacher, and author, helped us better understand the origins and workings of our universe. Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo, your host of the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Coming up, we'll talk about the life and legacy of the legendary professor and also learn about the crippling disease he was diagnosed with back in 1963. Listen Saturday and Sunday on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.